Hey to all you fish enthusiasts out there. Whether you're an avid angler or just curious about fish, we'd like to welcome you to Fish of the Week, your audio almanac of all the fish. It's Monday, April 15th, 2024, and we're on a week-by-week tour of fish across the country with guests from all walks of life. I'm Katrina Liebrich with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in Alaska.
And I'm Guy Eero, and you can hear me maybe cracking open my bottle of orange cream soda because we're doing the green sunfish.
Nice. And it's just the two of us for this one. And Guy, we haven't done a round robin in a while, which is where we just throw out words to describe the fish and how it looks or its size or behavior, kind of as a teaser. And then we dig into the details. So I would like to do that. And I'll start with most aggressive sunfish.
All right. They're pretty aggressive. I'll go with blue vermiculations.
I'll go with big gape.
I'll go with dreamsicle fins.
Okay, I'd like to hear more about that. Engaging wet pet.
Beefy.
Beefy. Pineapple.
Oh, you're beating me. I'm curious about pineapple, though. Explain pineapple to me.
A pineapple weighs about 2 pounds, which is about the size of the largest green sunfish ever documented. 2 pounds and up to 12 inches. That's a sizable fish.
You do got to remember, though, that 12 inches on a bluegill, you're getting a lot of extra height on that, too.
Literally a plate.
Yeah, it basically grows into a circle. You're talking about like a 12-inch diameter circle, whereas a 12-inch green sunfish doesn't get nearly as tall. Like, inch for inch, I'm more impressed by bluegill of various sizes than green sunfish, but I do find lots of big green sunfish, and they are quite fun.
And 12 inches, I mean, that's like the size of a ruler for folks that are looking for a comparison.
That's a good one.
So, Guy, I know you've caught one of these fish, and I haven't, so you got me beat there. And this means that you get to do the whole, if I had one of these fish in my hands, this is what it would look like. So can you please describe what a green sunfish looks like to someone who may not even be familiar with sunfish in general?
Sure, sure. So starting out with sunfish broadly, they're spiny-finned fish. So they're called sunfish, they're called panfish, they kind of got a round shape. Your bluegill, your crappie, your black basses, largemouth and smallmouth, those are all sunfish, all centrarchids is what we call them, family Centrarchidae. And then within that, most of the traditional sunfish fall into this genus Lipomus, which the green sunfish do as well. But unlike a lot of the other Lipomus species that are kind of big and round and compressed from side to side, so they're sort of flat like a dinner plate, the green sunfish is one of those species that is more bass-like. It's more elongated and more predatory. It's got a bigger mouth. Its name is Lipomus cyanellus. And while Raffinesque, when he was describing it, didn't say anything in particular about why he named it that, we can assume that it's probably because of the cyan or blue markings. It's got these blue vermiculations under its eye, kind of like war paint, these worm-like patterns crawling all over its face. And then those extend to hundreds of these blue spots on its scales that cover both sides of its body, mixed in with some yellow spotting as well. And then a good diagnostic characteristic is these two sort of symmetrical black spots. And so whereas you might have something like a bluegill that has only that spot on the dorsal fin, the green sunfish usually has it on both the dorsal and the anal fin. And speaking of that anal fin, well, also the pelvic fins, they can get, especially in breeding males, this bright orange color with white sort of margins on it. So I call those the dreamsicle fins. That's one of the most gorgeous fish, I think, between the blues and the oranges when they're in their bright colors out there.
Yeah. Are they actually green? I wonder why they call it the green sunfish and not the cyan sunfish.
I've heard some people call them blue sunfish before. I think that gets confusing with the bluegill, and especially, you know, we talked about they have those vermiculations on the gill cover that are blue that can lead to some confusion. But yes, they are green mostly. Their bodies will range. I've seen them really dark, almost like olive color to really pale, especially ones living in more turbid systems.
Yep. And you mentioned their mouth, and these guys do have a big gape relative to other species in the sunfish group. Their gape's more kind of like a crappie, I would say, in terms of gape size, but not so paper thin. And that should really make you curious if you're listening about what their feeding niche is. So what are they capable of eating? a mouth is really important to study when it comes to, you know, figuring out how to fish them or where they sit on that food web. And no, these guys are omnivores, which is fun because they can eat a variety of things. And I'm guessing that mouth size and kind of how firm it is lets them eat stuff like crayfish or snails or some of the different things that they're able to go after. What else do they eat?
You mentioned some good ones there. Yeah, they are omnivorous. They will eat smaller fish. They'll eat insects. You can catch them on flies, imitating bugs, imitating frogs, lures, imitating fish. Whatever that you can put in front of them that will fit in their mouth is things that they'll eat.
Even like hot dog, like kind of those grocery store baits, like corn kernels, even like swimmers, not like the person, but like the swim baits where it's something that they can aggressively attack.
Yeah, anything that looks like food, they'll eat just about anything.
So you've caught these fish, you described what they look like, we've talked about what they eat. If you're going to go target one, where are they found on the map, first of all, both their natural range and then where they've been introduced? And then at a micro scale, where are they found habitat-wise?
They're a North American species. They're only found here. I mean, they've been introduced in other places, but they're very special. The green sunfish is very broadly distributed. It's found north from sort of the Great Lakes area all the way down south into South Texas, probably northern Mexico. It's found in basins as far east natively as the Chattahoochee, which flows into the Gulf of Mexico, west to sort of the foothills of the Rocky Mountains. And then it's been introduced in places outside of there. Like I say, they're broadly distributed. One of the reasons that they're broadly distributed is because, as you mentioned, they're omnivorous, but not only do they have a diverse array of things that they can eat, they can withstand lots of habitat conditions. They have preferred habitat, generally, you know, slower moving water. They're not a river fish. They live in sloughs, slower parts of rivers. I certainly have caught them in rivers, but slower pools and backwaters, and then ponds. They're definitely a pond fish. And when you look at the Midwest and lots of these places, you have tons of these farm ponds and impoundments, and that's perfect habitat for green sunfish. It's also perfect habitat for things like largemouth bass and bluegill, which are the preferred kind of target sport fish as well as forage fish for those systems. And so you actually get a lot of people who get quite peeved when they find green sunfish in their pond because they're a more bass-like sunfish. We mentioned this in the Amblypleides rock bass episode where you have sort of the Amblypleides and you have your green sunfish and your warmouth sunfish is really the other one that is this kind of bass-like predatory sunfish. And so when you have green sunfish in your pond, there's this idea that they can compete with smaller largemouth bass and that you don't want that competition if you want to grow big bass. And there's some truth to that. But if you like catching green sunfish and catching big sunfish, they can get bigger than bluegill. They can put up a comparable fight to bluegill. And I think they're very pretty. I think they're very attractive fish. So I have no problem. In fact, I've had people, I'll fish their farm ponds. They'll say, hey, if you catch a green sunfish, throw it up on the bank. I'll say, hey, can I just take it back to my pond and put them in there? And so I'm trying to make my targeted green sunfish pond back in another spot.
You have a pond?
My grandparents have a pond.
Okay. That's cool.
Yeah.
I'm just curious what else is in the pond.
It used to be, you know, it was a bass, bluegill, there's some crappie in there. Now it's kind of gotten into disarray. And so there's like fathead minnows and small green sunfish I found. So there's green sunfish in there. You know, there's a saying that, you know, if you dig a hole and put some water in it, eventually sunfish are going to show up. And so that seems to be the case. I don't know how these ones got in there, if they're holdovers from a time when we used to have actual stock population of sunfish in there. Or, you know, one theory is birds carry some algae and some duckweed and growth on their feet and those have some eggs. And eventually they get.
Yep.
So I don't know how they get in there, but I think it also might just be that I'm a little soft-hearted. I didn't want to waste the green sunfish because I do like them. And so just moving them over and putting them in the pond seemed like a reasonable place to think.
Do they overlap with the warmouth at all in terms of range?
So I just looked up the warmouth range. I did not realize warmouth make it up all the way into like Michigan and Wisconsin. There is actually a ton of overlap. When I think of warmouth, I think of them as being more southern, kind of Georgia, Florida, swampy, and then off onto the Atlantic coast or the Atlantic slope, whereas green sunfish don't have any native range on the Atlantic slope. And they're restricted to their eastern part by the Chattahoochee. So the green sunfish, you don't get it on that Atlantic slope natively, but there's lots of places in that Mississippi drainage where you naturally have both. I've caught them out of the same hole before. One thing that's funny, everyone sort of lumps green sunfish and Warmouth together because they have similar ecological roles. They're these sort of bass-like sunfishes. But in fact, the most closely related fish to the green sunfish is actually the bantam sunfish.
I saw that, and I'm not familiar with them. I thought that was interesting.
It's a little tiny sunfish. It's not a pygmy sunfish, which, of course, it's their own genus. That's its own thing. Own family, actually, pygmy sunfishes. But it is a very small sunfish, and it's I don't naturally think about grouping them together. They don't look particularly similar, but I suppose that's the case.
I love looking at a fish family tree. I was poking around looking at this one in particular, and yeah, I thought that was really interesting as well. Okay. And I always get kind of curious with a fish like this. Are you targeting green sunfish specifically? Do people target them, or are they catching them accidentally as they're fishing for other species in that broad range that you described?
Most people aren't targeting green sunfish. I like to. I'm always a fan. I remember the first time I caught one, I had no idea what it was. I was fishing on this family friend's pond. We walked through the woods to find it. And it wasn't a bluegill and it wasn't a bass. And that's all that I knew at the time. And so I went home and I was thumbing through like a guidebook trying to figure out what it was. And I skipped over it because, and truth be told, it's hard to make a green sunfish look good in a color plate, even a photo. Part of the appeal of the green sunfish with all these blue spots is how they shimmer and shine and flash light. And you can't really do that. Maybe Tom O'Leary could do it. But most illustrators can't do that on a flat page with just one color. And so I remember looking at it, and I thought it was the densest fish I'd ever seen. I was like, this thing's got to be over a pound. It probably wasn't, but it just felt dense. And so my cousin, he studied fisheries in his undergrad. I was probably 10 at the time. And I was describing this fish. I'm like, I got this fish and it was blue and it was orange and it was green. And I don't know what it is. And he's like, yeah, green sunfish. Sure enough, that's what it was. I can find on a map and show you the exact spot within like a probably 3-foot radius of where I caught my first green sunfish.
Oh, that's cool. So they're kind of firm. They sound like a strong, kind of robust fish in general.
They're robust. They're beefy. Yeah.
They're beefy. So say you're fishing an area that has bass and bluegill and green sunfish. Is there any way to specifically target a green sunfish with your bait or with your style of fishing or where you're casting?
You kind of got to expect to catch a little bit of everything. You could exclude smaller bluegill and smaller traditional sunfishes by using a larger bait and kind of fishing like you would for largemouth bass. But it's going to be hard to exclude both bluegill and largemouth bass from your catch. And I don't think too many people are upset about that. It's not hard to find a green sunfish. It's if you're where they're found, odds are they're going to be fairly abundant. Maybe not as abundant as bluegill, maybe not as abundant as red-breast sunfish, but they're going to be there. I was out trying to catch these species of smallmouth that they have out in Arkansas and Oklahoma. I was fishing the Ouachita River. And whatever they've got in the Ouachita River there, it grows some very big green sunfish. I'm certain like the top 20 spots on my list of green sunfish that I've caught in terms of like length and weight all came from the Ouachita River on this one trip. Just massive, just hogs of fish. I was catching them on spinners because I was targeting smallmouth. These are shiner heavy systems, lots of little small fish, little leucistid fish. Looked like good crayfish habitat. I wasn't looking for crayfish in particular, so I don't know if there was any there or not, but it wouldn't surprise me if there were.
It's time for Minute with Maria. I'm Maria Dosal, calling in from Chogyang Lands here in Dillingham, Alaska. Big kigasakun to Guy and Katrina for telling me and educating me about this green sunfish. What a beautiful fish. I had to give a good laugh when Katrina mentioned a pineapple, because when I researched this fish, it kind of looks like if you put it up on its nose and sit it upright, and it does resemble a pineapple even a little bit. So whenever I listen in to these different species of fish, I always wonder, as an indigenous person that eats a lot of fish, I wonder, can I eat it? And so I have to give another big kigasakun to the sacred YouTube machine and TikTok machine for providing me with the education and the tools on how to process this green sunfish. So it turns out it is edible. You can eat it. There is a preferred season and time and depth in which the green sunfish are edible. So I figured that out, and it makes me wonder how it would taste if I had dried it and dipped it in seal oil. Would it be good? I heard that it kind of resembles grayling. So I would say probably yes. I'd like to get my hands on some. So if any of you listeners are out there wanting to dry up some green sunfish for me and send it up, let us know. Reach us in our email. Send us a message. And I want to get my hands on some of this to try. I'll send you fish. You send me fish. Let's work out a trade. And thanks for listening in. Go out there and catch some green sunfish to enjoy. Kagasakun, everyone. Bye.
So, I mean, in terms of reproduction, these guys, they have a nest. They're amongst other species of sunfish as well, if they're in the system. I'm curious if you know anything about just their reproductive behavior, and then also if they're able to hybridize with any of the fish that are similar in the systems where they're found.
These fish live in slower moving waters. They are nest building fish, and they do build nests in colonies, like basically all your sunfishes. People know about bass beds, people know about bluegill beds. So when you think about other fish that spawn in rivers, for instance, they lay their eggs in the gravel. And the reason that they do that is it protects the eggs and also allows water to flow through and keep them clean. And so in a slower moving system, either a lake or a sort of back channel of a river, you're not going to get that. And so what they do to provide that protection and also to keep the eggs clean is the males basically just guard the nest and they'll fan the eggs.
Yep.
They'll use their big tail and they'll just kind of gently fan them, and that keeps the eggs clean, sort of mimicking the flow of a river in a sense. And so they keep predators out by chasing them away. And you can have multiple species. All the species sort of spawn at roughly the same time. It depends on the water temperature. So you're going to get earlier spawning at more southern latitudes and later spawning at more northern latitudes. But it's late spring, early summer, and there can be multiple spawns in the same year. Like I say, they'll kind of be in colonies, and you'll be looking. You'll float over, and then you just see all these circles along the bottom. It's really neat. You can have multiple species close to one another, so you can have females deposit eggs in the wrong nest, the wrong species nest, and so you can get significant amounts of natural hybridization between sunfish species, and the green sunfish is no exception.
Okay. I did read that the male will court the female with grunts. Have you ever heard those? Are they loud? Yeah? Okay.
I've never heard them. They're not loud. It's not like a drum where you can hear it topside. And I don't know if that's always, or I think a lot of times just building the nest is enough, you know, kind of a Kevin Costner moment, you know, you build it and she'll come. But yeah, I do think the sunfish and the green in particular, they have been documented making some small grunting noises to attract females if she's not interested just by the nest.
And then I also was reading that the males will defend the nest from other males using visual displays or physical force. Have you ever seen any of those?
Not with green sunfish. I've certainly seen it with bluegill. And that's a funny description, you know, physical force.
Chasing them away. I want to know what that is. They're just like biting them, I guess? Or?
Yeah, they nip and they bite them and they run away or swim away, rather. When you watch them, it looks like they just kind of test each other, like making sure that they can really stand their ground. And, you know, if you're a small bluegill, you're probably not building a nest in the prime kind of zone. So I think they sort it out sort of beforehand. And so I don't think there's a ton of like nest takeovers or anything. Granted, I'm not saying this based off anything I know, but I do know that there are some males that kind of like your Jack Chinook and stuff that come back where they got this plan where they're the sneaker males. Yes, they come in. They don't put on the big breeding colors. They won't get those big orange fins like the spawning males that kind of are able to make these displays of dominance. They pretend to be a female, but then when they get in there, instead of laying eggs, they release milt and try and fertilize the eggs. And so that's their
strategy.
That is
so sneaky.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's a common strategy. Salmon do that and other species as well. That's cool.
Yeah. It's pretty common among fish. I don't know how common it is among other animals, but yeah, where you get these two methods that both sort of work. work well enough in order to pass on their genes.
So say a green sunfish hybridizes with a bluegill or something else. How can you tell what the hybrids are? What do they look like? And is this a problem at all?
So I've caught some fish that were clearly hybrids. I've seen them between green sunfish and bluegill. You can see them a lot of the different Lipoma species you can find hybrids, but basically just get intermediates. It'll look sort of like a bluegill, but it's more compressed than a bluegill, less compressed than a green sunfish. It'll kind of have the orange fins. The vermiculations won't quite be right. They'll sort of be there. And you talk about, is it a problem? It's not really a problem. In fact, in the wild, it's such a small percentage. You're not going to get like the species are now, you don't have either one anymore because they've all hybridized. And in truth, lots of people will intentionally hybridize these fish and then stock them because they get the hybrid vigor about them. They will be more aggressive. They'll grow faster. They'll get bigger than a normal green sunfish or a bluegill. And so when you hear hybrid sunfish, usually people are talking about a hybrid between a green sunfish and a bluegill, specifically a female green sunfish and a male bluegill. It's important to do those parental matches for good sex ratios is the reason. I think with a female green and a male blue, you get like 90% males. The reason that you want to do that is so you don't get a ton of natural reproduction in the pond itself. They're not sterile in a sense, but
they're
going to
get
them
bigger and not stunted with so many.
But you don't want this excessive reproduction that then results in the potentially stunting of your bass or your other things in the lake or the sunfish themselves.
Okay. So we've got people being pretty specific about stocking fish for catching in pond, say, environments. I mentioned engaging wet pet, and that was just a funny term I saw online describing green sunfish that people keep in their aquarium. And it was to basically say that they're very aware of the environment outside of the aquarium. They're very engaging, cool behavior.
In terms of them being engaging, I have seen them in aquariums in Georgia before. We've kept them at the fish lab, and they certainly do kind of, they'll follow you. They'll keep an eye on you. So I can confirm that, at least the ones that we had. You do probably want a pretty big tank. They're big. They're aggressive. We've had them eat our shiners. So we learned not to put shiners in. So if you're going to have other fish with them, make sure that they're too big for them to eat. Obviously, a green sunfish has a big mouth, but it's not going to be able to eat a similar size sunfish. It's still gape limited on what it can take in.
Yep. And those sunfish are set up with their spiny fins to prevent that to some degree once they hit a certain size.
Yeah. I don't know about all the particular laws about keeping them or transporting them.
It varies by state. And the other thing to think about is once you have a fish in an aquarium, you don't ever want to release it back into the wild because you could have disease issues in your tank that you may not be aware of. You don't want to be introducing anything new into the environment. So being cognizant of your state regulations, any permits you might need, and then just, not re-releasing a pet that you already have ever back into the environment.
I know some places require you to have permits to have green sunfish. Those are going to be places outside of their native range. I don't know, perhaps inside too. So I'd say check your state laws before you do anything. But like Florida, for instance, I know that they have a rule where you can have them in aquaria, but you need to have a permit. Other states I know are pretty strict on when you come into them in the wild, they require you to dispatch those fish to take them out of the system to kill them. One of the reasons that they make a good invasive species is the same reason why they can be good in aquarium, why you find them in so many other places, because they are able to eat lots of different things and they're able to withstand lots of different habitat conditions. You think about these things as living in farm ponds and swampy kind of lakes and systems like that. I've found them in places where I've been trying to catch, trout in the High Sierra Mountains. And I go and I fish a clear stream that I'm expecting to find trout and I catch green sunfish. Same thing, lower Snake River, catch green sunfish. So you really can find them in lots of places. And that's one of the reasons why you don't want to be moving this fish around. And because once they're there, they can establish themselves. They not only can prey on smaller fish, particularly, we've learned doing this show that even if a fish can get big, every fish is small at one point. And then also just competition for space. So it's not just that they're potentially eating them, it's that they're using the habitat. An ecosystem can only support so much biomass. And so if you're putting invasive species in there, it's necessarily going to have some effect on the native fishes.
I wonder why people would even be transporting these and how much of it is, like you mentioned, birds being able to move vegetation with eggs versus people actually taking a species like a green sunfish, which isn't the like primo, maybe sport fish compared to others. I wonder why people are moving them, or if it's accidental, it goes into a pond that has maybe an outflow during certain times of year and they just kind of get out.
I think it's some of what you're saying. Like, I don't think the bird thing is something probably for moving them too far outside of their native range. I'm guessing that's more of a, when you create a new water body, how are these fish getting in there? Back in the day, government agencies moved fish around a ton. Once it's in a new water, like you're talking about the Rocky Mountains, that's a big barrier to fish. But once you get fish over to the west
side,
they're
able to go.
It's easy to move unless you got dams or something. There's not much keeping it from moving up and down that system. And then potentially bait introductions. I know particularly out east and like in the Northeast, there's catfish out there. And things like blue catfish are themselves invasive, but people fish for them. And live bait, like bluegill, like green sunfish, that's something that is good at catching catfish. When we were in Iowa, the best thing to catch catfish, we'd bank pole for them and you put live sunfish on the line. And so... That's another way that, of course, fish get moved is it could get off the line, or more likely someone's moved fish. They got these live fish with them. And then at the end of the night, you don't want to take them back. And so they dump them. Obviously, you don't want to release live bait in any circumstances.
When I've gotten live bait before, just the amount of strange things you can find in there, like tadpoles and just fish you wouldn't expect that accidentally got caught wherever the bait was collected. So yeah, there definitely is a way to move fish in that way. So don't do that. Okay, so just to recap, the green sunfish, they're beautiful, they're beefy, they're a bass-like sunfish, and we'd like you to appreciate them where they're native. Be careful not to spread them where they're not, and get out there and live with, live from, discover, and enjoy all the fish. Thanks for listening to Fish of the Week. My name is Katrina Liebeck, and my co-host is Guy Iro. Fish of the Week is a production of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Alaska Region Office of Communications. Our production partner for the series is Citizen Race Car. We honor, thank, and celebrate the whole community, individual tribes, states, our sister agencies, fish enthusiasts, scientists, and others who have elevated our understanding and love as people and professionals of all the fish.